Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where every episode we talk about our favorite superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
G'day, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And if you want to send us emails, waitingfordoom@gmail.com is the place to do that. We're on Facebook, and there's a website which has blogs about the Doom Patrol that we exploit the kindness of the man who does that, and that's at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And all our episodes are available on podbean.com, and some of them are available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Indeed. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarb. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, who is Wilfred. He's at WFDPod. G'day, Wilfred, you cheeky scamp. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, Comicosity is an excellent site for comic information and articles and thought-provoking stuff. There's an article up there now that I've been reading, which is about, is Captain America a myth? Can you have a myth that modern? And it answers all those questions, and it's very interesting. It's by Michael Hale, and it's called Captain America as Modern American Myth, and it's very a good article. But enough about that. It's J.L. May. It's J.O.A.
Hooray!
Yay! And we have a special guest with us. It's Dr. Ange, one of the founding fathers of J.O.A., I think it's fair to say.
Yes.
J.O.A. came from a chat, I think, originally. Like, ooh, we should do something for to celebrate the Justice League in May. And Ange was there at the time.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ange, all the way from the States. And thank you guys for inviting me. Yeah, I believe that I was on vacation and I read Justice League Year One by Mark Waid and Barry Kitson. And, of course, the Doom Patrol was in that. And I kind of, you know, was tweeting out how, boy, this was like a primer of the DCU because there's so many people in that miniseries that somebody should put together something. And then I think you guys took the ball and ran. So that was the beginning of J.L. May, and I was happy to be a very small part of it.
Well, we honor you as a J.L. May guest, and this time, J.L. May, we're doing The Silver Age, which is a comic. It's a series of comics that is sort of emulating the Silver Age of DC's history. When is that? The 50s, 60s, around then? Everything was a bit goofy, and this is a modern attempt to recapture that goofiness. They brought back a lot of titles which existed in the Silver Age, and one of which is the Doom Patrol, hence us here doing it now. So if you want to hear earlier parts of the show, because we divide it up between different podcasts. That's what J.L. May is. It's a sort of podcast crossover. You might have heard the appalling promo for it.
How dare you? I spent hours on that promo. Hours, I tell you.
It's magical,
Mike. It lasted hours.
Anyway, if you want to hear part one, that was on the Silver Age issue one, which is sort of the standalone book that introduced everything. That was done on Justice's First Dawn with Mike Peacock. If you wanted to hear part two, which is about the Silver Age challenges of the unknown, that was done on Relatively Geeky Presents, which is Professor Allen's podcast, an excellent one. Part three, they really got the raw biscuit on this one. The Justice League of America, that was done Coffee and Comics. So our friend Clinton and Gregor Rougeau, they did that controversial comic with some weird stuff in that one, which isn't very Silver Age at all. It's a bit, subversive. Anyway, Teen Titans, Silver Age Teen Titans. That was on the Supermates podcast with Crindy Franklin. Just dropping recently, the Dial H for Hero episode, which was on the idle head of Diablo. Frank, you're a bastard. Sorry. Don't listen to the end of that one if you know what's good for you. Yeah, so that's where we're at now, and we're in the mix. And so this, we're going to cover the Doom Patrol one now. But first, we tend to do little traditional things on our show, and one of them is, like, how was your week in comics? So, Dr. Ange, how was your week in comics?
It actually was a pretty good week. I didn't get too many books, but the ones that I did really stood out. I have been reading Detective Comics since sort of Rebirth, and I very much loved that book. And I'm a huge fan of the Stephanie Brown spoiler and Stephanie Brown Batgirl, and this last issue really had a lot to do with her, which I thought was great. And then Justice League No Justice number one came out, and I enjoyed that one a lot as well. So it was a pretty good week.
Sounds awesome. More like lots of justice rather than no justice, but yeah. And you, Mike, did you read anything or do anything comic related?
Not so much, not since Free Comic Book Day, really. I've read Volume 3 of the current Justice League of America series, the Panic in the Microverse story arc. That was a lot of fun. That was really cool. And, yeah, just some Free Comic Book Day stuff. Oh, my first experience with any of the Meta Baron comics, which was, like, gorgeous art but completely bizarre stories. So I might check that out in more detail a bit later. But, yeah, so it's been a little bit light, but, yeah, good stuff still. What have you been reading, Paul?
I wish I'd been reading. I'm just stacking comics at the moment. I got a trade in the mail. I was very excited. The Punisher, the Platoon, Garth Ennis's return to the Punisher. I'm a real sucker for Garth Ennis on the Punisher, and him with Goran Pavlov. But I haven't got time to read it, so I was just sitting by the bedside. I've also got Lazarus... what is it? X plus 66, which is a miniseries related. Yeah, I got that. That's sitting there unread. I did read DC Nation Zero, which was all right. It wasn't bad. I thought the Batman contribution was really good. A very nasty story of the Joker terrorizing someone.
Mm.
And the Justice League one, I think, is a lead in to No Justice that bewildered me a little bit. And the Superman one was, it was okay. Just okay. And yeah, I did get my Free Comic Book Day comics, I think on Tuesday this week. So a lot later than everyone else, but they were still sitting there to be grabbed. So I have a pile of them to look at. I got Overwatch for the kiddies. I got the two Marvel contributions, so I'll check them out. And Superhero Girls, or whatever it's called. Yeah, so that all looks good. I wish I was reading it, but yeah. Anyway, at this stage of the show, if you've never listened to us before, which is, you know, probably likely, we do a segment called Going Down on Darrington Way. Darrington and Way being the creators of the current series of the Doom Patrol whenever it comes out. So let's go into that now. Nothing happened with the Doom Patrol this week, I think it's fair to say. No, I'm lying. I'm lying. Well, I mean, first, there was some hint that Young Animal Books were going to reboot the Doom Patrol soon. There is more Doom Patrol coming. This is on top of the promised issues 12 and 13, which we don't know when they're coming. They haven't been solicited yet. But we've heard in August there's a big Young Animal reinvigoration push. So hopefully they're going to have a few issues in the can by then, so we're not sitting around waiting for Doom. But I was up very early this morning. You were up very early this morning too, Mike, weren't you?
I was. Yes, let's just say yes, I was.
Yeah, and I happened to see this weird tweet, which was about a Doom Patrol TV show. And, and then for the rest of the next 6 hours, people were telling us about it, which is very exciting.
Which is awesome. I think it's really cool that we have fans of the show that were, like, you know, messaging us as soon as they could about the show. That's awesome.
It reminded me of Young Animal was announced. We had the same thing going on then.
Yeah. So it's great to see the Doom Patrol love there and everyone getting in touch with us. It's awesome. But yeah, we were aware of it. We were both up very early.
Yeah, so the big news, it's on the DC Universe, I think it's going to be the subscriber channel or something that you get through the web or something whenever it comes out. But, you know, they've got a Titan show, they've got a Swamp Thing show apparently, but now they've announced a Doom Patrol show, which is a spin-off from the Titans series. It stars the Doom Patrol characters, actors who have will be in Titans. Plus, they've announced that Crazy Jane will be part of it, which is very cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Berlantiverse and all that good stuff that behind everything. And, yeah, that's pretty huge news, and we're excited. I've got no idea when or how we will get to see it in Australia, but we will work on that.
Yeah, that's a bit of a concern. But luckily, Ange will, you know, be able to keep us updated, you know?
You know, I have to say, I'm not somebody that typically gets, like, streaming channels like that. I'm so old school with my box on an end table, but I've been so intrigued by all of this stuff. Like, the pictures of the characters who are playing Hawk and Dove in the Titans is just, like, incredible, and now a Doom Patrol show, so I might actually have to, like, join the 21st century and, like, do one of those things. I'll tell you, that Doom Patrol announcement was crazy, especially in the, you know, given that this whole Young Animal thing is just kind of a bummer, right, where they basically said, you know, all of the other books are basically going away. So my suspicion is that Steve Orlando is going to end up writing a new Doom Patrol book that's kind of more DCU. But we'll see if that comes to fruition.
Yeah, I would love to see Steve on the book. My suspicion is that they will move them closer to the rest of the DC universe proper, in the comics at least anyway. But yeah, I think with the announcement of the show, they're going to need to do something to give the book more profile.
Yeah, I think it's on the cards. I mean, we've definitely felt there's some sort of change in the wind for the in the wings for the Doom Patrol, and yeah. But I mean, can I be honest? I wasn't incredibly surprised by the news. I just felt, you know, it's inevitable at this point that everything DC owns is going to be a TV or a movie at some point. You know? So yeah,
I must admit I was quite surprised. I mean, I'm thrilled. I think it's awesome. But yeah, I was kind of like, oh, okay, that's some respect for the property that we love.
You know. I'm ready for the Forever People show.
Okay, yeah. So we know that it's been given a order of 13 episodes so far. Who would be like your top three appearances from within the comics in the show, each of you?
There is no way that Mallor and the Brain aren't the big bads of it. No way.
Yeah, because I mean, there's the whole Titans crossover stuff with them as well, so you know, it's a good possibility.
I think we've seen enough CGI of people changing shape that Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man has to be there as one of them.
That would be so awesome.
I think that. And then what about Giacomo? We've all been waiting.
Waiting for Giacomo, you know?
That's a deep cut. Giacomo was a dwarf who worked with the Brotherhood of Evil, and he was seen in the early appearances of the Doom Patrol and never seen since. So more than 50 years.
Last seen dressed up as a little girl.
Yeah.
As well. So not the most, you know, well, I guess it is kind of a notable exit, but yeah, for Giacomo. I would love to see Mr. Nobody on screen, just being his madcap chaotic self, causing the team the headaches that he does in the books. I think with, as you said, Andrew, with CGI that they can produce for TV these days, they'd have to be able to get him on the screen somehow.
Yeah.
You know? So
Season two, I'd say. Season two will be Mr. Nobody.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Mark my words.
Anyway. Yeah, rolling 2019. I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Hey, what's that ticking?
Oh, that can be the one and only Doom Clock. So as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's been 3 weeks since we last saw the Patrol in a comic, and that was Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 11, which was the lead into Milk Wars, which had already finished by the time Issue 11 came out. Ange, did you keep up with all the Milk Wars, and what were your thoughts on it?
I did keep up with all of the Milk Wars. I thought I didn't read Cave Carson the series, but I got the special, and I thought that was a pretty good issue. I do read Shade the Changing Woman, and I thought that Milk Wars crossover was sort of an okay issue. But I thought the two capstone issues with the Justice League I thought were very well done. I thought it wrapped everything up. There was so much meta stuff. I thought that that it all worked very well in terms of like comic book readers, comic book stories, comic book characters. I was glad Rita came back. The one thing, did you guys have a problem? Some of the pages with Rita, I thought that the word captions were like font zero and had a hard time reading them. Mostly those scenes where she was like being crucified and people were sort of worshipping at her.
Dark text on dark font, I mean, dark background in tiny font. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't notice. No.
Yeah.
Like, I actually had to take pictures of the captions with my iPad and then blow up the photo to read. It kind of took me out of the experience.
Nice.
Or like, maybe I just need glasses. I should see a doctor.
So, yes, we discussed issue 11 back in episode 122 just a couple of weeks ago. And issue 12 is, at this stage, due who knows when. But, Paul, you were saying August sometime?
Well, when the relaunch is happening in August, but I would have thought they would want 12 and 13 out of the way by then. But maybe that's not the way they roll.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I brought up the Doom Patrol schedule with my boss, and I said, you can't rush quality. I'm just going to take off until August. I'll see you then. he didn't agree with that approach.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Harsh. And this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it's a pretty special one, guys. Guess what came out this week between May 13th and 19th?
Is it first appearance of Hot Hands?
possibly, but no, basically, there was not a single Doom Patrol comic produced in this week across any of the volumes.
Can I have one?
Okay.
The Silver Age Doom Patrol was released on May 17th in the year 2000. That was the on-sale date, so according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics.
Right, okay. I was looking purely at Doom Patrol series.
Rookie mistake.
But anyway, okay, that worked. So the comic we're going to talk about this very episode came out this week.
Yeah, 18 years ago to the day.
Well, there you go. Look, I've been having tech issues all day, so I'm lucky I wasn't even able to find a way to look up Mike's Amazing World of Comics, which is an excellent website, may I just say, for all your historical comic book needs. Check them out. For those that follow me online, my computer, or those that don't follow me online, my computer died today. So we're having a lot of technical issues at the moment. So if I sound a bit different, it's because I'm speaking into my phone. Hooray!
Hooray!
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock, I guess.
Daddy, what did you do when Atlantis attacked?
I donned my iron armor to fight with Namor the Submariner.
That was Iron Man. What did you do when Atlantis attacked?
I gathered a group of heroes to fight against the Serpent Crime with my mighty shield held high.
That's Captain America. Try again.
I spun a web any size.
Spider-Man.
I punished the drug dealers.
I have no idea. But are you just doing another podcast?
Another podcast? Yes. Mark's Mess vs. Atlantis Attacks, a 15-part limited podcast series examining the Marvel annuals that have the banner heading of Atlantis Attacks. A story joining the Marvel heroes against the Serpent Crown. Find it at marksmesspodcast.blogspot.co.uk. On Twitter at Mark's Mess Podcast, and on iTunes by searching Mark's Mess.
Where's my fiber?
And now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, Doomsplaining, where we go into greater detail about a comic covering the Doom Patrol. And as we said at the start of the show, it's part of JLMA, this episode. And so we're looking at Doom Patrol in the Silver Age. So, Paul, tell us all about it, please.
Okay, so this is the number one comic. The cover price was $2.50, not very Silver Age-y there. Cover dated July 2000. As we said, it actually came out on the 17th of May in the year 2000. In the back in the old days, that was the future. Now it's the past. Edited by Dan Raspler, and it was written by Tom Pyre? I always said Pyre, but I hear lots of people say Pyre. And it was penciled by Sergio Carello. Says a Japanese man, I think, and inked by Raymond Crissing, and lettered by Kirk Hathaway, and coloured by James Sinclair. And it has an awesome cover by Ramona Fraden, inked by Kevin Nolan. And I think it's one of the best Doom Patrol covers ever. Yes,
it is. It is.
It shows the Doom Patrol under siege from an angry mob, and they're racing through the streets pushing the chief's wheelchair as people pelt them with stuff. And in a very Silver Age style, has lots of words and things on the cover saying, "Get out!" The cry through the streets of Midway City, leaving the super freaknicks homeless and helpless on the War of the Super Weapons. In the War of the Super Weapons. Yes. I'm not looking at the full-size picture at the moment. And I do like the man with the sign, Doom Patrol, get lost.
Yes.
They struggle with this a bunch, don't they? Didn't they get have people protesting them in the Copperberg run?
Yeah,
indeed.
Constantly.
Yep.
Poor bastards.
Yes. So, previously in the Silver Age, space villain Agamemno has teamed with the enemies of the Justice League and swapped the bodies of these enemies with the JLA bodies, and the villains have then left Earth in the heroes' bodies, but keep explaining this, to undertake MacGuffin gathering for later in the series, leaving the heroes trapped in the villainous bodies and trying to save the day and evade the law. So that's where things are at. This comic does open with a splash page showing action from later in the comic, but because that disrupts the flow of this synopsis, I won't cover it right now. So anyway, and it's called War of the Supervillains. No, Super Weapons. So one half of the Doom Patrol, Rita Farr, who's known as Elastigirl, and Cliff Steele, who's known as Robot Man, are out shopping in Midway City when Lex Luthor broadcasts a warning on the television seen in the storefront of stacked TVs, as you see in the old days. And his message is this: the Justice League have committed atrocities and superheroes can't be trusted. Now, it's helpful to know at this point that this Lex is actually Superman trying to prevent the villains from exploiting the public trust. Robot Man is appalled by the gall of this villain, but he's interrupted by the crowd turning on he and Rita, and they start, one man pulls out a gun, it's a bit extreme, and Rita turns on Cliff's chest camera, which enables Niles Calder, the chief, and Larry Traynor, Negative Man, to see their predicament, so because the camera broadcasts back to the chief. Larry sends his negative energy as zooming off to help, and he whisks them off the ground and out of the mob's angry grasp. And the negative energy flies as fast as it can to ensure that it's back in Larry's body before 60 seconds has elapsed, because then he dies. Ooh. Cliff is seething, and he storms off to confront Luthor, but the chief commands him and the others to stop. He recaps their origins, which is helpful for this story, explaining how they all, ended up as freaks working as the Doom Patrol. And he warns that Lex looks like a legitimate businessman, and they look like freaks. So, going to beat Lex may not look very good for them. And he points them to his giant monitor screen. We're very impressed with this giant monitor in this one. It's huge. Very good giant monitoring by the Doom Patrol in this one, where he's been graphing Lex Luthor's morality, and you can see that the graph goes all the way down, and then he met Superman and it just fell off completely, but in the last few days it started to rise. So he's had some morality appear recently, and there's some sort of evidence of nobility in Lex. Cliff is still furious, but the chief tells him that if Lex can be trusted, then the world is in grave danger from this news that the Justice League are now evil. With this in mind, he has offered the Doom Patrol services to Lex, and they leave at once for Metropolis. Then in Chapter 2 of War of the Super Weapons, elsewhere in the lair of the Doom Patrol arch-nemesis military-decorated geezer, General Immortus is taking a call from the obese alien despot Gargiwax, another foe of the team. Immortus has been sent the Justice League security camera footage that shows Agamemnon coming and swapping the bodies of the heroes with the villains and all that shenanigans. And the same mysterious person who provided the security tapes has also told them about a secret stash of super weapons that was held by Lex Luthor. Perfect for two villains left out of the big scheme. At LexCorp Tower at this point, Lex receives words that Garguex and General Immortus have taken his bait. So he was the source of the message. And this is Superman in Lex's body. We've got to keep reminding everyone of that. Yes, and he's struggling to play the role of an arrogant businessman. And he keeps being too polite to his assistant, Miss Lutwak, giving instructions to return in a minute with the message that he discussed earlier with her. So he's doing a little charade. And the Doom Patrol barge in at this point, and Cliff is breaking the door and denting the desk and all this sort of stuff. And they generally share this pleasure at his message of distrust for heroes. And then at this point, Miss Lutwak returns and tells Lex about Garguex and General Immortus making a play for the anti-JLA weapons. And Lex fires her immediately and tells the patrol to pay no attention to her crazy message. The chief and the team demand Lex tells them about the location of the weapons, but Lex kicks them out. But secretly, Lex, really Superman, just reminding you, is satisfied that he has put the patrol and their foes both on the case to find the weapons, because the real Lex Luthor knows where they are, but he doesn't. And the other thing is, he's pretending to be Lex Luthor in case there's he's being monitored in LexCorp by hidden cameras, or etc. So he's trying to keep up a charade of being evil just in case. He did fire Miss Lutwak, but he asked her to track the Doom Patrol via satellite before she leaves. Hopefully she did. Hopefully she gets unfired at some point. Anyway, and then we don't get to see the Doom Patrol working out all the details of where everyone is, but they do. And then immediately we see the Doom Patrol busting into General Immortus' secret den because the chief had a supercomputer that could work out that he was using a name that sort of gave it away. Garguax beams Immortus out of their grasp just before the Doom Patrol can, capture him. But Larry's negative energy is able to follow the energy at the speed of light up to a LexCorp satellite. And the waiting Garguax zaps Negative Man with Luthor's anti-flash gun, which is a gun to take out the Flash. Without the negative energy reintegrated, Larry is certain to die. Which brings us to part three of War of the Super Weapons, and Larry does merge with his wounded energy form and is safe for now, but really out of the fight for this little bit now, at the time being. In space, the villains gloat over the deadly anti-JLA arsenal, interrupted by the arrival of Rita, Cliff, and Larry, all in spacesuits. Cliff cops a blast from an anti-Martian Manhunter ray that makes his gravity increase exponentially, and Cliff is about to clobber Garguax when the Tyrant shoots him again with an anti-green arrow gun. I would think an anti-green arrow gun would just be a gun, but that's me. But what it actually does is throws his vision off by 2 meters, so Cliff ends up punching thin air instead of Garguax. Rita herself is snared in an anti-atom bubble, which starts shrinking on her and going to crush her. But then Lex Luthor, who's secretly Superman, just remind everyone, arrives and punches Immortus just in time to prevent Cliff's demise. And Rita directs Cliff to punch the hole, actually 2 meters from Garguax, which leads to him directly punching Garguax in the face. Hooray. Luthor reverses the blast to free Negative Man and then asks the team to look after the anti-JLA weapons in case they're needed later. And that's the end of the story. Gentlemen, what did you think of this?
So I thought it was actually a pretty fun issue. There definitely was, if nobody had read a Doom Patrol book before and read this, there were like things that you can check off that you needed to see, right? So like giant monitor, check, right? Mm-hmm. statement about Larry, dying if it doesn't come back into his body, check. And then all of the usual, funny language like the fabulous freaks and all of that sort of stuff, I thought really took me back. I thought Cliff was portrayed as sort of his most irascible, like when he busts into Lex Luthor's office and he's like, oh, clumsy me, as he like punches the door, off. So I thought all of that was good. And I do think this artist kind of thought, he makes Rita quite fetching. She always seems to be like bending at 90 degrees at her waist in the majority of this book. But otherwise, I thought this was like, it really kind of felt like a throwback issue, and I think that that's what it was trying to accomplish. So I thought it was a ton of fun.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'd agree for the most part. I'm not a huge fan of the art in the issue. I think it's fine and it does the job, but I think I love the cover of this issue so much. It's just perfect, and I'm a bit disappointed that it wasn't the same artist on the interior stuff as well, but, you know, kind of everything. But you're right, Ange, it's a perfect throwback to the Patrol as they were in the original 60s run. And what I also love about this is the way that the comic is broken up into the three chapters, just like the old Patrol issues in the 60s were back then. And I also love the old style of, you know, like quarter page of ads down the bottom for the other DC books in the Silver Age event. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's got the corniness as well from the 60s, like the secret identity name that General Immortus uses that they figure out because it's G.I. Oldman. And I'm like, really? Like, come on. And then you realize, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, that's the sort of thing that, you know, they would have done back in the day with Drake and Premiati on the book. So a couple of silly bits. I did like Supes trying to keep up the charade of being Lex, you know, like just being a bastard to poor Miss Luthwack, you know, and when she leaves the office, he's singing himself, "Merciful, wow, how does he keep this up all day?" So it is a lot of fun. I can't really fault it. It's a good one-and-done story, really. And you're right again, Angie. It's got the origin stuff. It's got, you know, the limitations. It's just really well done.
Yeah. I mean, story-wise, it's straight out of the Silver Age. I mean, it would easily fit in with the Drake Premiani stuff. Art-wise, doesn't quite feel the same, but, I mean, it is good art. I mean, I'd say it's much better than a lot of what was going on at the end of Volume 2. But it doesn't really have a particular Silver Age style.
And that's what I mean about the cover. I think the cover's perfect for that style. I wish it had carried over to the interior, but, you know.
Yeah. I will point out my absolute favourite panel is the one where Lex has rescued them and Cliff is going to thank him and puts his hand out to shake his hand, but of course he's 2 metres off to the wrong side because of the Green Arrow ray. So he's basically shaking midair. Fun stuff. And, I mean, as far as this did a really good job of tying into the Silver Age but standing alone. If you didn't read this, you'd be fine. If you didn't read any of the others, you'd be fine. But, you know, as a whole, you know, it's just a fun adventure while the villains are all body swapped with the heroes and, you know, a focus on Superman and Lex Luthor, sort of.
Mm.
Yeah. But
kind of.
Good to see these two villains getting a spotlight. I think Garguax gets short shrift these days. I don't think anyone is game to use him anymore. And I think
which is a shame because he's good fun.
Yeah, he's a really, you know, a 50s style alien tyrant with, you know, wearing a muumuu.
He reminds me very much of the old actor Sidney Greenstreet, who was in Casablanca and the Maltese Falcon. And so whenever I read his lines, I always read them in that guy's voice. So it's rather funny. He had this sort of like, you know, always clearing his throat a little bit in between lines. And so that's my dream casting, is resurrect Sidney Greenstreet and put him in that television show as Garguax.
Right.
That'd be great. Yeah, and I mean, that'd be amazing if they used him in the TV show of all the characters.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. If we're going to carry on with the JL May journey, I guess we should direct you to the next shows in line. So the very next one will be probably the Silver Age, The Flash, and that'll be on the Long Box Crusade podcast, which is... Have you guys listened to that lately? It's Pat... used to do it on his own, but now he's lost complete control of it. It's pretty zany. He's got the Albrecht brothers and Delvin, and mm-hmm. yeah, it's It's sort of fun chaos. Then it continues in Silver Age, the Green Lantern on the Lantern cast, long participants in JLMA. The Silver Age, the Brave and the Bold is on the Comic Reflections podcast. Silver Age Showcase on Showcase is on Batgirl to Oracle. That one's already out, but you could, you know, if you haven't listened to it, you could save it till a few of the others are out.
Mm.
And then the finale of the whole thing is Silver Age 80-page Giant, which is on Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill. And there's also an issue with the Fire and Water team that will be coming out in the midst of all this on the Silver Age Secret Files, because DC was doing Secret Files and Origins at different points, and this is one of the ones they did. Yeah, have you read it all, Ange, or any of it? Or?
You know, I have to be honest, I've been listening to all of these, but I haven't dug up any of the other issues. But I'll tell you, I'm pretty intrigued by what I've heard, to the point that maybe I need to sort of start go scrounging around.
Yeah, they're kind of fun. I mean, they don't really matter. Like, I understand why DC never collected this, because, you know, it's a bit... It has no impact on anything as an event. I mean, in the eventiness scale, it's not very eventy at all, is it? to borrow from the terms we use on DCOCD. But it's fun. It didn't launch anything. It was just more an exercise in let's revive the Silver Age and do some, you know, old-timey comics for fun, which is what they did. So, anyway... I think we've doomsplained it fairly well.
Yes.
Yes.
And now it's part of the show where we go through the mailbag of doom and look at what responses we have to our question of the week, which we provided in the last episode, which was, who is the best panel-to-panel visual storyteller in comics? So, firstly, we heard from Martin Gray, and he said, Gene Colan's work was always beautifully fluid.
I was just going to say, you know, Paul, you know, his stuff on Night Force, I think, worked very well.
Night Force. I remember Night Force.
Yeah.
We then heard from a young at Dr. Ange 70 on the Twitters, and he said, there are so many that jump to mind, but I'm going to go with Walt Simonson. His pages flow so wonderfully cinematically. Others considered Howard Chaykin, Gabriel Hardman, John Tottleman, and George Perez.
What do you think of that comment, Ange?
Well, you know, I think that guy's pretty smart. you know, I just think back to that, you know, that Thor run that Walt Simonson did back in 1983. That's 35 years old. That still holds up today. I mean, you read that today, you know, that's like a perfectly fantastic story still. And that the art on that just crackles. So, I mean, that was the first thing that jumped to mind was his run.
Cool. I've never read that. I think I've even bought it, and I haven't read it digitally yet. Kind of when Marvel was selling everything for a dollar.
Right.
All right. Next, we heard from Carl Bakey, who said, "Aiko, hands down. I was blown away by their work on the Nick Fury miniseries last year for Marvel. Huge splash pages and innovative panel layouts. Oh, and bonus points. They lent their absurd talents to Milk Wars as well. And I agree that issue that they did was pretty good.
Yeah."
I don't know who Aiko is or what Aiko is, but yeah, I like the art of Aiko.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a team of people, or but there we are. Next, I have to say, Lycan Mitt Everwake, which I believe is your friend Kevin, who makes an anagram out of his name every time, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Kevin Weather.
Yes, he said Will Eisner, which of course is a great pick. I mean, you know, Eisner's a master. And then right after that, the Long Box Graveyard said, yes, Will Eisner. So I don't know if you guys have any comments on his stuff.
I've read a bit of Eisner. I can see it certainly flows very well. I haven't exposed myself to a heap of it yet. But I'm not sure about the actual stories, whether I love the stories or not. But the storytelling is very good. Yeah.
I have to admit, I've never read any Eisner.
You know, I mean, I think the thing that gets me is that you can see how even today people are influenced by his art. So, you know, I think it sort of stands the test of time.
We heard from Tim Price at Tim Price 17, and he said George Perez is more prolific, but Jeff Smith's Bone is phenomenal storytelling. I agree with both those things. Perez is no slouch at the storytelling either, is he?
Yeah, well, yes.
Yeah, his page layout is the thing that always gets me. Like, he's able to put in so many inset panels, but it's not as if you're like, how the heck do I read this? So I think from the actual question of panel-to-panel stuff, he's spot on.
Secret Wars and Beyond chimed in with, I have to go with George Perez, has the beauty and the storytelling, simply the best. Okay, lots of Perez love. Very cool.
And then, in a little bit of a twist, Ed Latour said, I would have to say, Alan Moore, circa Watchmen, because of how he used the panel layout as a story element in and of itself. Chapter 5 is a palindrome. As much as I dislike Alan and Watchmen, I have to acknowledge what he made there. So he put a writer in for this question, which I do think that Moore's script flowed very well in a way that the artists took great advantage.
Yeah. And they were massive essays. I don't think you can underestimate what Dave Gibbons brought to the table there, though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I said John Tottleman, but really what I mean by John Tottleman is John Tottleman drawing Alan Moore stuff, right? The Swamp Thing stuff and the Miracle Man stuff. So I think that give Alan Moore a check.
How about you, Mike? Who do you think?
There's so many good ones, but a personal favorite would be Doc Shaner.
Oh,
Particularly on his Flash Gordon stuff. I just love his art in that, and it just flows so well. Like, the page I bought from him at HeroesCon 1 year is just like three panels, but you can tell that it's, you know, Flash and Dale sort of hurtling through space, and it flows so beautifully, and it's just... You know how there are artists or writers that you follow if you love, like, anything they'll do? I'm like that with Doc Shaner. I'll grab anything of his that he puts out, because he just does such a brilliant job at telling the story with visuals, I think. So, yeah, Doc Shaner for me.
Hear, hear. I'm going to go with Darwin Cook, who, you know, gone 2 years now. But, he was... without any hyperbole, a modern master, and his, you know, his way of showing the flow of action was just brilliant, and, you know, looked effortless, but it was, you know, such an extraordinary talent taken way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bummer. So we did get an email this time. We got one from Martin Gray, and he sent us an email titled "The Reread," because we said basically that we would both reread the whole Darrington Way Doom Patrol run. And he starts off very sarcastically. It's fantastic you lads are planning to reread the whole Darrington Way Doom Patrol. I honestly could not be bothered. And I doubt it'll make much more sense read as a lump than it does waiting to see if a new issue drops before we hit the next geological era. I'm the original glass half full guy. The latest issue was just a mess, a load of tossed-off exposition, underdeveloped plot holes, and random quirkiness. There's far too much metafiction, and I still cannot give a hoot about the Reynolds family or suddenly magical barbarians. It's 20 years since Grant Morrison had his run, and creators really need to let go. Boy, I'd love a nice linear story featuring a small focus team of heroes whose personalities we could be assured... I'm utterly sick of not knowing who's real or whether the actions matter in the bigger Doom Patrol story. I wish Geoff Johns' version had received a proper showcase. Anyway, listen to me. I'm ranting. Move on. Read a nice email from Ange.
We'll do you one better than that, Martin. We'll have him on the show.
I take Martin's point. I personally don't think Gerard Way is copying Morrison. I think he's doing his own thing. It just happens this is what he wants to do.
Yeah. He's riffing on Morrison stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen a bad copy of the Morrison stuff, and that was the start of Rachel Pollack's run, and that was very different to this.
Mm-hmm. You
know, yeah. And there's been really strong emotional stuff in the current run, and, you know, character work on Casey particularly has been superb. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so yeah, I understand how it's not Martin's cup of tea, but I don't feel like it's just a rip-off. Morrison is one of the writers who really inspired Gerard Way, so, you know, I feel it's his influences rather than, you know, he's trying to redo it all.
you know, for me, I mean, you have to remember that Morrison's run, I think, had its peaks and valleys as well, right? I think
it kind of lost
its way in the middle and then regained. So I think everybody looks back at that and is like, oh, it was perfect the whole way through. It wasn't. I mean, it was fantastic. And it still, I think, is probably the best or neck and neck with the original stuff. But I have to admit that the pauses between all the issues of the current one has just broken me, right? So that I feel like I almost have to go back and read it as one, because I would read an issue that came out and I would be like, I don't even remember what happened the last issue 2.5 months ago. I'm sure I'm missing details. So I wonder if reading it all together at once will just make it a little bit more linear than it felt.
I think it does, and I think it will. I mean, certainly there's a lot of planning and structure throughout it, but I mean the delays have been terrible for the book and for, you know, the experience of getting it in single issues. And, you know, certainly the process of synopsizing it is very much a case of, oh, what happened last time, can I remember? And, you know, before the last issue, I actually found myself listening to our episode on issue 10 just so I could remember what it was about. So
I do agree with Martin's point about, you know, not knowing who's real and who's not, because I think that was a really cool, unique thing about Casey. But then it was like, oh, hang on, Terry's apparently not real either. Oh, and now Cliff is apparently fan fiction. So I think that got a little bit done to death almost. But yeah, I think for me the worst part about this volume has been the delays. I've loved everything else about it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you guys that I told my wife I wasn't going to help out around the house until August, but when I do, it'll be high-quality help. and she can't rush me, and I don't think she appreciated that. I brought up the Doom Patrol as an example, but she wasn't buying it.
Wow. First your boss and then your wife. You know, what's with these people, Ange? Honestly.
Anyway, that's I guess we're coming towards the end of this show. I do have some more late breaking news about the Doom Patrol TV show.
Oh yes.
Apparently Cyborg will be in it, and he will be the one who sets them on the path at the start.
Okay.
Cyborg once again connected to the Titans, it looks like, not the Justice League.
Has he been mentioned as being in the Titans show?
I haven't heard mention of him, so this is the first.
No.
So, well, can't wait to see it whenever we can in the future.
At some stage.
So, what are we doing next, Mike?
Next up on the feed, hopefully, all things willing, if we make a sacrifice to the tech gods, we'll be doing DC OCD Episode 9, which will be covering the death of Superman.
Oh, that little thing.
Ooh.
Yeah, just a little blip of an event. And then the week after that, we will have episode 124, and we will, I promise, this time be returning to volume 4 of The Patrol, covering issues 9 and 10 from John Byrne's run.
Ooh. That's the stuff.
Do we have a question of the week for the next time on Waiting for Doom, Paul?
We do have a question of the week. It looks from a distance like we just ran out of questions of the week. That is not the case. We are going with the question, ask us anything. So we'll have a bit of an open forum for questions. So
I
already know mine.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God.
Hang on to it.
Favorite track on Business as Usual.
Get out.
Wow. I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
I think he is.
Ah, oh, dear.
Anyway, if you want to ask us anything, you may do so by sending a Twitter message to @WFDpod, which is Wilfred. You can send it via email to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can put it on the Facebook page, and you can also put it on Doug's website, and hopefully Doug will tell us about it, which is mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And if you want to see all the news about the TV shows, go to Doug's site. He has the posts and the pictures of the people who are starring in it, which is very helpful. At this stage, these are names I do not know. Soon they will be names that I know. So,
yes.
Like Bruno Bitcher, as Niles called her. I hope I'm saying that right. April Balbi. These are hard names to say. Is that why they have a picture? As Elastigirl, Jake Michaels, that's a weird name, as Robot Man, and Dwayne Murphy as Negative Man. So, yeah, they look like a pretty fine cast.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly
The biggest name I knew was Minka Kelly is playing Dove, and she was kind of like a teen actress here in the States for a while. And that costume looks good. So.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar now you mention it. But yeah, okay.
Oh. Cool. So I don't know who's playing Cyborg yet. Well, we don't know who's playing Mento. Anyway. Let's get out of here. Hope you all enjoy Jail May, everyone.
Yeah. Bye. Hey, thank you guys so much for inviting me. I have such a blast with you guys.
Always good to have you on, Ange. Thanks for joining us.
I should let you plug your stuff, Ange. Where's all your stuff? If people want to know more about your online life and et cetera, where should they go?
I'm on Twitter mostly at DrAnge70, so you can find me there tweeting about breakfasts and comics and sports and old movies. And I run a Supergirl blog called Comic Box Commentary, and I do a lot of Superman stuff there as well.
That's a really good blog. You should all check that out. It sounds humble, but he's a fantastic blogger and probably the best Supergirl blog in the universe.
Well, I mean, you've only been doing it for a short time, haven't you, Ange? I mean, you only hit a small anniversary recently, didn't you?
That is true. I came upon my 10-year blogging anniversary back at the end of April, which is just crazy. But
yeah.
It's an excellent creative outlet for me, so it's almost mental rest to write about this stuff.
Excellent. Congratulations again. Top.
Thanks so much.
If you stay on the line, Andrew, I just want to ask you about my hemorrhoids before we All right. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next time on Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
It's J.L. May. We're covering the Silver Age.
This J.L. May, a comic event from Mark Waid.
We're crossovering a podcast. There's 12 of us involved.
Get it in your ear holes, this J.L. May.
We'll tell you all about the Silver Age. It's not great,
but it's okay.
We really have to warn you, it has a controversial one.
Where Mark Miller wrote the lead,
but it also has some good stuff. Deep Thought style, Age Metal Man.
Challenges of the Unknown.
Green Lantern Flash Patrol of Doom.
The Seven Soldiers of Victory are in there too.
Annual J.L. May event is upon us once more. 2018, we're reading The Silver Age from 2001. The journey begins in the podcast Justice's First Dawn and continues in the shows Relatively Geeky, Coffee and Comics, Supermates, Waiting for Doom, Idlehead of Diablo, The Long Box Crusade, The Lantern Cast, Batgirl to Oracle, Comic Reflections, Cosmic Treadmill, The Fire and Water Podcast.
Do you know it's J.L. May at all?
Check the date.
It came out in 2000.
We got it right.
And we're ready for some fun.
Do you know it's J.L.A. at all?
all begins this May.
Read the books, listen to the podcast too. Read the books, listen to the podcast too. Read the books, let them know it's JLMA something.